Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you once again. Phil, hope you had a good National Marquette Day. I did. How was yours?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was good to be amongst 17,000 of my closest friends while celebrating victory. It was
My friends were closer to 30. we had a nice little watch party here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I hope many of you had watch parties in wherever you live, and it seems like it was a very loud crowd. It seemed like a great crowd, a lot of energy on the Fiserv Forum. It came off that way on TV. Was it like really lively, excited crowd, Phil?
I would say the crowd was generally energetic. I think much more so in the second half. They really kind of came alive as the team's defense came alive. But the first half, they were a little quiet for my taste, but all things considered equal, it was a very good crowd.
Very good. So we're going to talk about the Butler game, and then we're going to look ahead to, gosh, I can't believe we're here, the final week of the regular season.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we're starting to start talking brackets. Do your Jerome bracket, if that's your thing. And then we'll be talking conference tournaments pretty soon. And I think the conference standings are really starting to take shape. We kind of have a good idea of what Marquette may be facing in New York, but we'll probably deal with that more next week. But for this week, Phil, you know, I guess part of the thing you were talking about with the crowd off to a slow start, the team got off to a slow start because they trailed for pretty much the entire game almost the entire first half and really well into the second half. And so like those lingering concerns about the defense and the slow starts were still there. But, you know, in the end, I'm not going to complain. You know, they didn't cover. I think it was 8.5. They ended up winning by 8, so Vegas did it again. But, you know, I was definitely satisfied with the W because in the end it was a comfortable win. But the slow start, were you concerned at all about the slow first half there?
Yeah, I was in the moment, right? Like, I think it's different. Like, I've been able to be cool, calm, and collected when I'm watching games at home. But then, you know, when you're in the crowd and you can kind of sense the crowd being uneasy, it's hard not to also be uneasy. And it just kind of reminded me, and I don't think this is like an all the way bad thing, but it just kind of reminded me that's what the team kind of started out as early in the season, right? Like in the non-conference season, this team was known for slow starts, right? And we joked about it last week, right? You got to get down by 12 to unlock the cheat code to win, right? And so it wasn't that bad with Butler, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a great feeling first half for sure.
No, and I think, you know, Justin Lewis got off to a slow start. He kind of came alive in the second half. Didn't have a great game overall offensively, but I think he's had better games, but one of my quick takeaways just from the game. Now, granted, I was at a watch party. Watch parties, as many of you know, are not really conducive to game analysis mm-hmm. and breakdowns because, you know, you're talking to people and having drinks and whatever. But I think one thing that was easy to see was the impact of Stevie Mitchell.
Yes.
His best game is a Golden Eagle, safe to say. He great energy off the bench, got a couple of buckets, and just was just a great spark off the bench. And that's kind of, you know, I'm sure a moment he's kind of been waiting for all season because his playing time has been limited, just given the depth chart and kind of where he is as a player at this time. But offensive rating of 166 in that game, 11 minutes played. Again, he had, 5 points? And yep. It just doesn't show up in the box score. He was a menace on defense too. So just love to see that effort from Stevie. And just he's just one of those young guys who's not getting a lot of time this year, but still got to be excited about what his future could be.
It's interesting though. Like I absolutely like he was dynamic that game. Most of his minutes came in the second half, which really had an influence on kind of Marquette turning things around. But he still only had 11 minutes, which is not even in the top 10 of most minutes he's played all season, right? So, like, it's pretty special to be able to, and also kind of interesting that Shaka did not use him more. But, you know, he really had a outsized impact for 11 minutes. Like, if I wasn't looking at KenPom, I would have thought he would have had at least 18 or 19 minutes yesterday. He just felt like he was everywhere the whole game. And it was really just, you know, kind of a 8-9 minute burst in the second half that really kind of put the team on his back and carried them through some tough times there in the middle second half.
Yeah, nice. Great game from him. Another strong game from Cam Jones, who got the start in that game. I think, you know, Shock has kind of been going back and forth with that fifth starter, whether it's going to be Cam or Omax. He went with Omax off the bench on Saturday. Cam Stones continues to kind of show that moxie. I mean, he hit a few big shots. Granted, you know, it was not like it's certainly not his best game from a scoring standpoint, but just another opportunity for him where he hit a couple big shots and just kind of gave the team some momentum.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other one to call out is Oso Igudaro. I think Kerkwath was a little bit limited and was not playing particularly well. So Oso stepped in with some big minutes and big defensive minutes, right? Between Stevie and Cam contributed on the defensive end. And Oso Igudaro had a couple, like, it was a thing of beauty to watch live when Oso just timed the poke out of the post that resulted in a turnover. I think NZ was trying to back Oso down and he managed to poke it away. And that was, you know, the turnover that resulted in the bucket that got Marquette the lead. And they kind of never looked back, right? Like, I guess the end result of an 8-point differential felt closer than it really was, because Marquette was pretty much in control of that game for the last 3 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, for what it's worth, the likelihood of, you know, the likelihood of winning on KenPom. I'm saying it wrong, but the
win probability.
Win probability. That's what I'm trying to say. Likelihood of winning. What the heck's wrong with me? The win probability on KenPom was in Marquette's favor for the entire game, even when they were trailing in the first half. Butler was never the favorite to win at any point as far as win probability on KenPom. But yeah, it's one of those games where even though Marquette was trailing early, you're always kind of like, they're going to win this. Like, they're going to come back and win this. They're not losing this game. And I guess I kind of felt that way for most of the game. It could never kind of set in, even in like into the second half, that, man, they could lose this game. I just felt that they were better, and it was just a matter of them waking up and just hitting a couple shots and just getting a couple sparks from somebody and maybe get Justin Lewis going. And, you know, Mitchell provided that spark. And once Lewis hit a couple shots, he got that big putback dunk. And then Oso had that really nice finger roll in the second half, too.
Yep. They
put strung a few nice offensive possessions together there. And then they got the W. So, yeah. The win never really felt all that much in doubt, even though they were trailing. They were trailing or tied for, like, what, like 75% of the game, something like, you know, 60% of the game, something like that. So, but yeah, I felt like Marquette was going to win pretty much all day.
Yeah, well, and it was interesting because I think one of the things to peel back, so in the first half, Marquette gave up 33 points. In the second half, they gave up 23 points. But of note, 4 of those points came in the first minute on back-to-back layups by Butler. And then I think Butler scored one bucket in the last 4 minutes or something like that. So Marquette's defense pretty much went on a 33-19 run or 34-19 run in the last 19 minutes of that second half. That's something we can build on.
Yeah. Yeah. Early on, it just felt like Butler was just hitting everything again. Like, for the first, I don't know, maybe up until the first, maybe the under 12 timeout, like, Butler, like,
yeah.
I was thinking, is this Hinkle Fieldhouse again? I thought the shooting percentages were supposed to go the other way when we get into our gym. But yeah, there was certainly some, I don't know, letdowns defensively that, you know, I don't know if they're going away at this point, but I, you know, it still was a decent defensive effort overall when you look at the entire game. I think Marquette is now, are they back to a top 40 defensive team? Oh, they're 39 on KenPom defensively. So they're back where we hoped they would be. That was always the goal all season long, to be a top 40 defense, which Shaka has had every year since his third season at VCU. So they climbed up a little bit in that regard. So, but yeah, there's always, I guess there's always room for room to get better, and there were certainly gaps in that game where you just maybe felt a little uneasy, like, come on guys, get it together, we're better than this team, just let's get a couple of stops. And they finally got it together, but I can understand if there are concerns going forward, but ultimately they did what they had to do. They took care of business. They beat Butler at home relatively comfortably, and now it's just kind of finish the season strong and take care of business a couple more times.
Yeah, well, and I think, and maybe this is optimistic Phil talking, but I think there's reason for hope, because that second half, again, not only did they not give up a lot of buckets, but they kind of go hand in hand. Marquette got something like 10 kills in the game, and I think 9 of them came in the second half. Right, like so the team, you know, maybe they've learned, hey, we need to reapply our energy, we need to get in here, right? Stevie Mitchell, as an example, was just a pest everywhere, right? And so maybe the team's learned, hey, we got to reapply our energy on the defensive end, and be more successful there. And you know, and you said Justin Lewis had an off game. He absolutely did. That was, you know, he went 0-6 from 3-point range, which that's Justin Lewis of last year and early in the regular season. So you still want him taking those shots. They were open shots in the flow of the offense, so they weren't anything pressing.
Yeah, he didn't take any bad shots. He just didn't make them.
Right. So I think again, you know, the team's going to ebb and flow, right? You're going to have bad shooting streaks. You're going to have tough moments. But if they can get back to the point where they win with defense, which is absolutely what they did here, it's not like they went on some blistering hot streak. They just turned Butler over and then got buckets as a result of that. So, yeah, I think it's really about getting back to that win with defense, play with violence kind of mindset that they seem to have more in the second half.
Yeah. So Big East standings kind of taken shape. Granted, there could still be some shifting in the last.
Oh, is this where we talk about the asterisk? Let's talk about the asterisk.
Yes, conference is the Big East champion. Our Providence is the Big East champion. So you got to give it to the Friars. They've won 14 games. So Villanova, Connecticut, not catching them. Granted, Providence is—they're lucky. We joking last week, the difference between lucky and clutch is whether or not you like the team. But let's keep it 100 here. Providence has had some games canceled that they probably would have been underdogs in. Then now they don't have to play them, and they got Creighton this week, missing Nembhard, and they've squeaked out some wins here. They went to what, triple overtime to beat Xavier, overtime to beat DePaul. But they keep winning.
Overtime to beat Butler.
Overtime to beat Butler. So, good for Providence. Because, like, the top six teams in the country lost this weekend. Who knows? Maybe let's just go ahead and get nuts, put Providence number one team in the country. What do you say?
Mine as well. Yeah, let's go.
Number one. Duke number one, Providence number two. Let's get nuts.
Screw those predictive analytics. Let's just put them all the way to the top.
It just, whatever. but, as far as Marquette is concerned, it's looking pretty likely that it's going to be Creighton Marquette for a third time in the Big East tournament. It's look in some order they're going to be 4-5, depending on how this final week goes, because it's looking pretty likely that top three are going to be in some order Providence, Villanova, Connecticut. Then you got Creighton Marquette there in the middle, with Seton Hall, Xavier, St. John's kind of bunched behind them, with Marquette having DePaul and St. John's this week. Take care of business there. You should lock yourself into that 4-5 so you don't have to play on Wednesday at the Big East tournament, because it's the top five teams that got that right. Yeah, top five teams get Wednesday off because number six team has to play the 11 team, in other words, Georgetown, you know, on Wednesday. So that's the way it's going to shape up. But again, if you're going to get that, Phil, you got to take care of business this week. And it's been a long-running joke, Phil. Been a joke for many, many years. And more than ever. I don't know if this is the best example of it, but boy, it's up there. Don't lose to DePaul.
Do not under any circumstances lose to DePaul.
As St. John's did on Sunday.
Yes. Several teams have. I've got to say, And to your point, the do not lose to DePaul has been a running joke for many years. I honestly think this is like, I don't mean this in an overwrought way, but like of all the DePaul teams we didn't want to lose to over the years, I feel like this is the team that's like the most legit DePaul team in quite a while. Not saying that they're like a great team or anything. No, I just like, think that they're solid.
They're making strides. I'll give them that. Yeah, they're not like, yeah, they're bad, but they're not like pathetic.
Right.
You know, Freeman Liberty's had a good season for them. Jalen Terry's a pretty good guard. You know, the first time they played Marquette, they hung in with Marquette in Milwaukee.
They had a lead at halftime.
Yeah, so it's not like, yeah. They are not where Georgetown is right now. It's a losable game for sure. But now, to be clear, it's like, it would not be like the worst loss to DePaul ever. There have been many that have been much worse. That's why do not lose to DePaul became such a thing, is because Marquette did it so damn often. Like, so often.
Right, right.
But this would not be any kind of good loss, to if that's even a thing you want to say, but because DePaul is still a top, you know, a outside of the top 100 on KenPom, you're still favored to win this game according to KenPom. DePaul is nowhere near an NCAA tournament team, so you're maybe risking seed lines if you lose this game, because Marquette's, you know, looking maybe in that 6-7 range, and you know, you lose to a team outside the top 100, you know, maybe you're sliding a little bit. Especially considering overall, Marquette has lost more games than they've won over the last couple weeks. They're 3-4 over their last 7 games. So, like, not hot, like, not terrible, but also not crushing it either. So, you don't want to add a loss to DePaul to that 3-4 stretch to get to 3-5, which would include then 2 losses to teams outside the top 100 on KenPom. So, for all those reasons, like, it would still be a bad loss, is what I'm ultimately getting to. It's not the worst. It wouldn't be the worst DePaul loss ever, but it would certainly not be great.
Yeah, I mean, losing to DePaul on Wednesday would be, I don't think it's an embarrassment, right? It's like that some seasons have been in the past,
yes.
But it would be bad it would be one of the worst outcomes, right? Now, granted, the was it 2020 when we lost to DePaul going into the Big East tournament? That was bad. I mean, quite frankly, that broke some people. So that was probably the worst of them. This isn't that, but it would hurt. I think it, you know, losing to DePaul risks dropping us. I think we're probably at worst a 7 seed. I think if we lose to DePaul, we drop into that 8-9 range, which, dear God, I don't want to play any of the number ones in the brackets right now. Like, yeah. I want nothing to do with a Gonzaga or an Arizona or any of those guys.
Yeah. And look, yeah, you want to avoid those at all costs for that reason, because you're probably got a short stay in the tournament if you're in an 8-9 game. So by beating... I think by, granted, I don't study this. Alan does it on Crack Sidewalks, but just my bracketology is basically based on gut reactions after looking at Bracket Matrix and all the people who do it. But my gut reaction is if Marquette can get 3 more wins in some regard, you know, like if, you know, win these last 2 and, you know, you get the first win at MSG or something like that, they are 7 at worst, maybe climbing up to a comfortable 6, right? So... But if they lose either of these next 2, you're probably putting yourself – I just kind of feel like you're probably putting yourself in a position where you're looking at a short stay in the tournament, because an 8-9 game is always a 50-50 game. Even if you're the 8, you may be the underdog in the first game against the 9, depending who you get. And then, yeah, you're going to be a huge dog in that next game, whether it's – I'm not even sure who the number 1 seeds are now based on all those teams losing over the weekend. So, but I assume it's going to be Gonzaga – maybe Duke, maybe Auburn, Kentucky. Likely, I want no
Kansas.
Part of Kentucky. Kansas,
no, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. Between Kansas and Kentucky, we may never grab a rebound if we play either of those teams.
Oh my gosh! Or Gonzaga too. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Between Holmgren and Timmy, want nothing to do with those guys either. But yes, But, you know, if you get into that 7 game, yeah, at least you get a 2 seed. Granted, it's still not great, but 2 seeds do lose in the first weekend with some regularity. But the ultimate goal is you get in that 6 or better. Then you can start talking about optimistically maybe seeing the second weekend. But
Can we just, for the record, I was just looking through Bracket Matrix. There are three outliers. There are two somebodies that have Marquette as an 11 seed right now, and somebody that's got a 4 seed. I don't know which of those things is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, but holy God, those should be disqualifying marks.
Have some of those like not been updated in a while? Right. The guy who has this as a 4 was his like last update like mid January.
It's Tom's bracket madness, which
well, everyone
updated,
checks out.
Yeah, well-known bracketologist Tom. Is he the guy from MySpace, maybe?
Maybe so. I'm glad he's picked things up after everybody got off MySpace.
No, Tom updated this as of today, sir. Today he has Marquette as a 4 seed.
Well, I hope Tom is right. I hope Tom is – I hope he's the smart one and all the other 106 brackets on Bracket Matrix are all wrong. And Tom's got it nailed. So good for you, Tom.
Holy crow, Tom. Holy crow.
And for the people who have Marquette as 11, they should be fired.
Yes.
Get him out of here. Get him out of here.
Yes.
So getting back to DePaul really quickly, Phil, anything that you took away from the first DePaul game that we should be watching for in the rematch? That all I remember from the first DePaul game was blue, we're in blue. Blue. We're blue.
Oh,
hey,
God.
Blue.
It's hard to believe that Stubblefield is getting what he's getting out of this team with what we saw out of his coaching style.
I know.
Like, what is happening? Like, are they just self-coaching? Are they like,
yeah, for those,
like,
yeah,
does Stubblefield leave the room and JPL or somebody's like, nah, man, we're not doing that. We're going to do this. Like,
yeah.
For
those of you who don't catch what I'm talking about, the first time Marquette and DePaul played, that was when the coaches were mic'd up for the entire game, and we were in the huddle, and Stubblefield, he must have said blue 100 times during that broadcast. Like, that was the name of their defense, and it's always like, hey, blue, we're in blue. Hey, blue. Hey, getting blue.
it like, he said it so often, it started, like, it's one of those times where the word starts to lose meaning. Like,
yes.
It's like, what is it? What is he even saying?
I was just like waiting for one player to like turn to like, okay, damn, we're blue.
Wait, did you say red? I missed it. I didn't hear.
Did I ever tell you my Imani Bates story?
No, like, please.
It just getting a little off topic here, but it was funny. So when he was in high school, he came to Texas, his high school team, and you're ever at a game where there's a fan who's yelling the same thing like all game? Like all game.
Yes. Yes.
Like they're always yelling like the same catchphrase or the same thing at the players. So there's this one guy, and this was like during kind of COVID, where like loose COVID restrictions where there was limited crowds, but there were people there. So in this arena he was playing in, it was relatively empty compared to what it normally would be, but you could hear people all game. And so this whole game, Imani Bates was you know, every time on the offensive end, this guy would be yelling, Imani, let the game come to you. And, like, Imani was not having his best game. He was missing shots here or there. And it's like, hey, Imani, just let the game come to you. Imani, let the game come to you. He'd get fouled. Imani, let the game come to you. And there was one more time, like, late second quarter, he got fouled going to the basket. And the guy goes, hey, Imani, let the game come to you. And Imani just whips around, looks at the guy, and goes, okay, damn. And the guy didn't say it the rest of the game.
Good. You know what? Quite frankly, that's on Imani for not saying something sooner. Like he could have saved all of you.
Yeah, but so like one of my coworkers, for that reason, anytime we're watching a Memphis game and Imani's struggling, we just text like Imani needs to let the game come to him.
Oh, but, Ward. Oh,
anyway.
That's got to be.
But anyway,
word,
back
right?
to DePaul. So they're going to be in blue in this game.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Yeah. The win trust. To your original question before we got on to the topic of letting the game come to people, I think it's rebounding, right? Like that was the thing I remember. DePaul just rebounded their socks off in the first half. And I don't know that it got better in the second half, but I think Marquette's defense got better. So I just want to see this team come out with energy and really just start to finish. Let's put together a game that's a solid defensive game, right? Like, I think even more so, like, the St. John's game, we'll get to it, but that one's going to be just a hectic, helter-skelter mess. This DePaul game has the opportunity for Marquette to just say, look, here is our defensive identity. We're going to play with violence. We're gonna stop DePaul from doing what they want to do, collect the rebounds, and go. And that's what I want to see more than anything. It's just a constant kind of energy that results in missed shots, turnovers, and Marquette going the other way.
Yeah, your point about rebounding is a really good one for DePaul, because that's one of their best numbers on KenPom is their offensive rebounding percentage. At 32.2, it ranks 54th in the country. So they get a lot of offensive rebounds, and our Marquette struggles on the glass has been very well documented. Offensive rebounding, they're ranked 325th in the country. Defensive rebounding, they're 310th in the country. So DePaul's looking at this game and say, hey, if we crash the boards, we should get enough second chance points that we can keep this thing close. So I think that's a very solid point and something good to watch, because, again, at this point, Marquette will probably never become a great rebounding team. It's just, can it be not terrible? Or
Right. Can it keep you from winning bad?
Right. Or that stat we've talked about a few times, which I think I might as well go ahead and make that to take my money for the DePaul game, and that's turn them over more than you allow offensive rebounding. So more turnovers for DePaul than offensive rebounds allowed would probably be the, one of those numbers to keep an eye on in that game, because between Jones and Freeman Liberty, their defensive rebounding numbers are pretty good. What's this guy's name? Nick Ongenda. He's one of their better offensive rebounders. So, yeah, you got to keep them off the glass, and that's really going to be DePaul, because they're not a great shooting team by any stretch of the imagination. So it's when they're missing the outside shots, just don't let the big guys get those second chance points and get them extra, extending possessions. So I think it's a good thing to keep an eye on. So do that. And again, you're still a favorite, even though it is a road game, and it is bad things do tend to happen to Marquette when they head to the greater Chicago area. But yeah, keep them off the glass, or again, just keep it to the point that it's not awful. It probably won't be good. Just make sure it's not awful.
Right. Don't make it atrocious. And the win trust is fine. Like, I would feel a lot more weird if we were going back to the Allstate Arena, because there was just, I don't know if it was ghosts or what, but that place was just awful. The win trust is, it's not great, but I just don't feel bad about it like I did the Allstate or Rosemont. Actually, it was the Rosemont Arena. So I would just play with energy. They've got to play the game in front of them. They've got some time to kind of, I still think they're in a bit of a slump, right? Like, obviously they've won four out of their last nine. Which is not where you want to be. So here's an opportunity to say, hey, look, our last 10, we won six out of 10 or whatever. So if we can sweep DePaul and St. John's, that's, six out of 10 going into the postseason. That's a pretty good place to be in. Like, we would have liked some more, but that's still not bad.
Yeah. We get over it, because you built up all that goodwill in January, right, so that maybe you could have a less than perfect stretch run. So, but hopefully that less than perfect stretch run does include a win over DePaul and a win over St. John's, which is going to be on Senior Day. So that game will be Saturday. I think they announced the game time 8 Central. So thanks for that.
8 o'clock.
Thanks for that, Big East. Yeah, I guess the Big East has a television schedule they have to go by, so Marquette's kind of at the mercy of the league there. So Senior Night, Owls Night, and because of the first game being canceled, this is Marquette's first and only matchup with the Johnnies this season. The Johnnies, of course, feature the guy who was the preseason pick for the Conference Player of the Year, Julian Champagne. Still one of the best, one of the better scorers in the league. And, he's a guy, you worry about him getting into the groove, right? Where he's constantly hitting outside shots and just finds his rhythm, and all of a sudden you blink and he's got 20-something points and closing in on 30. And then Posh Alexander, who had a great freshman season for them pretty really good defensive player. I would imagine he is going to be a pest on Kolek or whoever else is handling the ball for Marquette. So, you know, those two guys, like, give me the most heartburn coming into this game, in addition to St. John's rebounding number. Like, their offensive the contrast in St. John's rebounding numbers. Offensive rebounding, they rank 65th in the country, which is a pretty decent number. But defensive rebounding, they rank 316th in the country.
Yeah, because so they're trying to get out and on the break.
They are. Like, that's the one thing that jumps out to them. They're the number one team in adjusted tempo on KenPom. Marquette is fifth, so... Or, I'm sorry, not fifth. That's, I'm looking at possession length. They're 40th. Still, so not a slow team by any stretch. So this game might be more, maybe track meet is overstating it, but this one might be more of the more high possession games that Marquette has played in the Big East this year. So this, there might be a lot of points scored in this one.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't be shocked. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if this game's in the 80s. And honestly, it probably feels like, you know, from a take my money standpoint, if you're looking for something new, like, does Marquette hold St. John's to less than 80 points, right? Or 70 or something like that. But this game feels like it's going to be a lot of possessions. It's going to be played at a bit of a frenetic pace. Now, luckily, Marquette, you know, in theory, plays against the press all the time in practice. So handling shouldn't be too bad. But yeah, that'll be interesting because. You know, Marquette has, when they've played against the press, we even saw in the second half, the last 10 minutes of the Butler game, when Butler went to a three-quarter court press. Marquette doesn't break the press to score a bucket. They break the press to get into the front court. That's kind of their shtick. So it'll be interesting to see, with as much as St. John presses, like, does Marquette just get it across the timeline and then set up its offense, or is it going to kind of speed itself up?
Yeah, maybe. You know, it might be an opportunity for you. Might be a game where you want as many ball handlers out there as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, Kolek hardly played in the previous game. I mean, he got his minutes against. He got his minutes against Butler, but in the previous game, we played like 8 minutes against Creighton, right?
Mm-hmm.
He barely saw the floor, so. I think this is the game where you do want as many ball handlers out there as possible. So, opportunity for Kolek there. And again, Posh Alexander is going to be, I would assume, be the guy defending him. So, that'll be an interesting matchup to watch. But, yeah, I mean, that's always been kind of Mike Anderson's thing. Is he, you know, he's a Nolan Richardson disciple. He loves that press. He loves that pace. And that's what he's going to look to bring at Marquette. Bring to Marquette, and of course he's just going to rely on Champagne mostly to keep that offense going, because he is still one of the top players in the Big East. I don't know if he would be still in the running for Big East Player of the Year. I don't see him mentioned in that regard. Maybe because St. John's just isn't that good, or St. John's hasn't won as many games as many thought. But he's still a guy who concerns me that, again, he could, you know, go off for 30 at any moment.
Yeah, who do you think Marquette puts on him defensively? I mean, Daryl, maybe it's Daryl, but that feels like a mismatch for Daryl, because Daryl's not a pace guy. He's more of a physical guy.
Yeah, I mean, look at his size, because, you know, Champagne is, what, 6'8"?
Is he 6'8"?
I mean, that's what he's listed at on am I looking at it wrong? I think that's what he's looking at, what he's listed at on KenPom, is listed as 6'8".
Wow.
Yeah, 6'8", 215 is what they got him at. So may see Omax on him quite a bit, just for the length, just to get a hand in his face.
I would think we'd want to see Omax on him more than, say, Justin Lewis, right? Like, Justin Lewis is fine as a defender, but I don't think we want to Tucker Lewis out chasing around Champagne when you know you've got Omax, who's like the Energizer Bunny.
Yeah,
you know.
I don't know about Lewis on the perimeter against him.
Right.
You know, Lewis had kind of a tough game defensively against Butler too.
He struggled. That first half was pretty bad for Justin.
Yeah, wasn't his best game. He'll bounce back. I'm not too worried.
Oh,
about
I'm
Justin
sure.
Overall, no, yeah. not at all. But, so I mean, there are overall, big picture, Phil, yeah, there are reasons to have some pessimism, or maybe that's not the right word, maybe some trepidation in seeing how this week could go badly. But I still feel good about the team overall, that I still think they can get two wins this week. You know, granted, DePaul is always going to scare just because it's at DePaul and bad crap happens, but Marquette's better, and they took care of business against Butler. I think they can do the same. And yeah, first matchup with the Johnnies this year, and hopefully only matchup, because I don't know how the bracket will work out. Maybe we don't see them at MSG, but if you could just bring a, you know, if you can just keep up with them pace wise and just keep Champagne from going off and manage their press, Marquette's better than the St. John's. I mean, St. John's just lost to DePaul this past week. Not playing very well overall this season. I guess St. John's best win this year in the Big East was, I mean, they beat a slumping Xavier team a couple weeks ago, but other than that, they beat Seton Hall back in mid-January. So, not a whole lot of great wins for the Johnnies this season. I think Marquette can go and get that game. That's a home game. I mean, it's senior day. You better take care of business at home on senior day. So I think I got two wins this week.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not expecting a blowout, neither one. Like, I just think where Marquette's at and what those teams have and that sort of thing, I think they're going to be – I don't think we're going to be, like, biting our nails, but I think they're going to be routine. You know, for what it's worth, Ken Pama has us only as a 3-point favorite against DePaul. So, you know, and a 6-point favorite against St. John's. So, you know, these aren't going to be, like, blowout wins, I think these are going to be the types of games that Marquette can win, but it's not going to be like a wire-to-wire Marquette's just dominating start to finish. I would not expect that, but I do expect wins.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm getting in cliche town here, but that's kind of the way it goes in the Big East, right? I mean, aside from whoever the worst team is in any given season, which is, of course, Georgetown this season, and it has been DePaul in many other seasons, I mean, like 90% of your games are going to be grinds in one way or the other, but there's always that one or two teams where you get them at home, especially that's like, all right, we got this one. But
right.
Most other games, you're going to be, you know, back and forth for most of it, and if, you know, they're a team you're mostly better than, maybe you pull away in the last few minutes like we saw against Butler over the weekend, right? Like, it was not easy by any stretch of the imagination, but it was back and forth for most of the game, and Marquette did pull away at the end. And I would expect a similar outcome for, honestly, both of these games, that there will probably be moments in the first half of both of those games where we're like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Like, this again, or, you know, what's going on here? Like, oh, we're giving up too many rebounds, or, oh, we can't hit a shot. But over the course of 40 minutes, I think Marquette gets them both. Yeah, again, it may end up being only a 3 or 4 point win at DePaul, or only like a 5 or 6 point win against St. John's. But I think they'll get them both.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So, anyway, I guess we'll just see where that leaves Marquette as far as Big East tournament. And we'll see how that shapes up for March Madness. I can't believe we're talking brackets. But, yeah, I think it's all but a lock that, you know, if Marquette gets two wins this week, they will be in that 4-5 game. I haven't really looked at the schedules. Who are some of the other teams? Providence is actually – they're almost done with Big East play, aren't they?
They've got one game left because they've got – they're off on Saturday.
Okay, so they've got their one seed locked up. What does Connecticut have this week? Just bringing them up really quickly. Like, if they were to conceivably lose two games. So Connecticut has Creighton away and DePaul at home for their last two games. So
yes.
And they are two games better than Marquette. So hard to imagine Marquette catching Connecticut. Because, I mean, if Marquette wins two and Connecticut loses two, they'd be tied. Don't want to start figuring out tiebreakers at this point. So, yeah, I think it's pretty, you know, now if Marquette were to, heaven forbid, lose two games this week, then, yeah, maybe you are in danger of playing in those first games because then maybe Seton Hall or even Xavier could jump up at you. For those, it may come down to winning percentage because I don't think everybody's going to play. A lot of teams aren't going to play 20. I don't think anybody. I think Villanova might be the only team that's going to play 20, if I'm looking at everyone's schedule right. But looks like Butler and DePaul might get to 20 games. Most other teams are only playing 19, though. So, yeah. And, again, we can talk about it more next week, Phil, but I mentioned last week, I'm you got to play somebody. You can't just get right. Georgetown. You can't get Georgetown three times and win the Big East Championship. So you got to play somebody. So if you're going to play, you have to play somebody in the middle of the pack for your first game. I'm okay with Creighton, especially if they don't have Nembhard now. So they have lost a guy, and the first two games, Marquette literally one play away from winning both of them. So I would not mind one more shot at the Blue Jays.
Well, and you know, and Creighton, you know, with Nembhard out now, maybe they have a couple of games to figure it all out. But like they had a short bench anyway, so having Nembhard out, like I don't know, they're going to be leaking oil, I think. So I think in the grand scheme of things, it is a good matchup for Marquette. Catch them the third game and. You know, you win that one. And again, we've talked about it. I think some people maybe feel differently. I don't really care about the Big East tournament that much. Like, if we win, great. I'll celebrate. But my biggest thing is don't get hurt. Don't cause any seed line issues, right? Like, you know, and if we're skipping the bye, if we beat Creighton, who will be shorthanded, and then we'll probably play some combination of UConn or Villanova after that. I mean, losing to either team in that situation is not a bad thing. No. You know, it's not it. You don't want it, but like, it's not that big a deal. So to me, as long as we beat Creighton, that takes any negative seed line issues off the table. So yeah, it's really about staying healthy.
Yeah, I think really, as long as you beat DePaul and St. John's this week, I think even a first round loss to Creighton probably doesn't cost you much.
That's true.
Because like 95% of the teams in the country are going to lose. During championship week, only a few are going to actually win their conference tournament championship. So everyone's taking a loss at some point. And Creighton, as losses go, would not be Creighton on a neutral would not be any kind of a disastrous loss that's going to push you down a seed line. It's just that combined with a loss to DePaul or St. John's this week, that may start, you know, putting some dents in your resume. So again, I would be optimistic about beating Creighton, but before we get there, just got to take care of business this week. Are we still doing don't step on rakes? Or are we done with that?
No, I feel like as soon as we stepped on the first one, it was like, all right, that's not a shtick we want to keep going. So yeah, I think it's just don't lose to DePaul.
Yeah, that's the shtick that we tend to go with. And we'll keep that one going. So do not lose to DePaul.
It's a time-honored tradition.
It is. And I hope Shaka does not take part in it. Doing what so many others have in the past and losing to DePaul because
it's changing culture, right? We're turning over a new leaf.
We're going to stop it. We're just going to stop doing that. Anything else? Any other topics we wanted to touch on before we get out of here, Phil?
No, I think it's a bit of a short week. We only had one game, and you know, I think we got to keep our powder dry for next week when we talk Big East tournament. And hey, we're going to have a Selection Sunday where we're worrying about where we're going to get placed, not whether we're in. And that, my friend, is a great feeling.
Oh, it's exciting. Like, I'm ready to see a bracket now. Like, I just want to see that bracket. I just want to know where we're playing. I want to know who we're playing. I want to know the location. I want to know if it's Thursday, Saturday, or if it's Friday, Sunday. I just want to know everything. But we got to wait a couple weeks before we get into it. But, yeah, I think we're just kind of at the point of the season where we're, you know, there's not much mystery anymore. We know what this team is. We know their strengths. We know their flaws. We know what needs to happen for them to win games. We know the things that they do poorly, and when they do those things poorly, that they lose games. And we kind of have a general idea of what to expect. It's just a matter of playing the games and what good things happen and what bad things happen. Oh, big picture, we have seen what this team is. We know what it is. And, you know, when we get to the end and we're doing, like, final report cards, it's going to be an A for Shaka no matter what. You know, this has been a great season. But now that we're so close to it, like, I'm just getting greedy about it and want to get I want to get as many wins as possible because, you know, you hope next year is going to be better and the next year is going to be better and everything's going to be better after that. But you just never know for sure, like, what's – around the corner, right? Like the next injury or the next transfer or the next team that's bad in the league that's suddenly good or something, you know, whatever. So you never know exactly what's going to happen. So when you're in a position to do some damage in March, you want it all. You want to get greedy and get as much as possible. So I am excited for that opportunity, and we'll just get to that when we get to it. So
yeah, no, exactly. You play with excitement on the opportunities you have. Don't look ahead to too much other, you know, like everyone could say, oh, next year we'll be better. Who knows, right? Like, players leave, people get hurt, right?
Yeah, we all think so, and we all hope so, but you just don't know for 100% certain. So,
right.
Carpe diem. Right.
Yes.
Let's win these two games. Hey, hit us up on Twitter. I am Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. Go to cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. You can leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And we also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page where the podcasts are posted as well. Phil, have a good week, and don't lose to DePaul.
Yep, absolutely. Let's get two wins and be done with it.
Brackets next week. We'll be talking about them. Until then, seashells and balloons.